Chapter 11. Jehovah Nissi. The title of this chapter is translated as "The Lord is my banner." This means that the Lord will fight my battles. In Exodus chapter 17 verses 15 to 16, we see where Moses built an altar to God because God had sworn to fight against his people's enemies. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Proverbs 3 to 5, NKJ 5th. If we trust in the Lord with all our heart, we will trust him to fight our battles, knowing that whatever he decides to do in our situation, he knows what's best. I have come to this realization, but there have been times when I tried to handle things according to my own understanding. I didn't let God deal with it, and thus I was unsuccessful in my attempts. I was scheduled to start trial near the beginning of May 2017, and I was anticipating going to trial in May. I had come up with some ideas to prove and or disprove evidence against me. To my surprise, God was not going to allow any of my ideas to prosper. I was told that the prosecution was going to try and use my wife's insurance policy as a motive for the murder. In all of the evidence, there were checking and savings accounts for both me and my wife with Wood Forest National Bank. There was just one problem. The evidence did not contain any of my accounts which contained money. The evidence consisted of only the closed accounts and those that were in the red. This made me look like a broke man, desperate for money. In a meeting with my lawyer, I explained how the bank account circumstance made me look guilty and how we could fix the problem. I suggested that we get my account information from the bank, which showed my active checking account with thousands of dollars in it at the time of my wife's murder, the account that the detective somehow forgot or neglected to submit as evidence. Unfortunately, my lawyer, Nisha Sanders, was not able to acquire the information. A few times, she mentioned the form, but she did not think that it would play a key role in the case. I wrote letters and faxed them to the place where my wife was employed at the time of her death, Mid-Delta Home Health and Hospice. One of those letters read as follows. Thursday, September 25th, 2014. I, Edward Broom, hereby authorize Sanders and Sanders Funeral Home to receive any and all funds, paychecks, etc. owed to LaKayla Foreman Broom by Mid-Delta Home and Hospice for their services. Thank you, Edward Broom. I gave instructions to read the second letter at the funeral services for my wife, but that didn't happen. The letter was telling of the great characteristics of my wife and how she didn't deserve what happened to her. It also mentioned words of encouragement to the children whom she left behind in her passing. When I spoke with the funeral home guy over the phone, asking for a certificate of death, he told me that he didn't know that I was the person who had authorized them to receive the payment and that I needed to send him $20 for the certificate. The above letter is part of the evidence, and so is the second, but the majority of the second is covered by stickers labeled Mississippi Forensics Laboratory, so much of it is difficult to cipher. I mentioned earlier in this book how my father-in-law made a written statement about my wife leaving me and moving to Jackson, Mississippi. I knew this was not true and I could prove it. All I needed was for my attorney to access my email account that was active at the time of the murder and print a few of the emails that contained my job search's contact with the employers in the Jackson, Mississippi area, proving that we both planned to relocate together. Unfortunately, my Yahoo email account had been inactive for too long to do such a thing, and there was nothing my lawyer team could do about it. I didn't see it then, but God was definitely showing me that my help would come from no one other than him. I started fasting in January 2017, eating only one day each week, on Sundays. I had said, I'm going to fast until I go to court and go home in May 2017. 1 week before my trial, my lawyer informed me that my trial was postponed until September 2017. The news of the continuance broke my spirit. After crucifying my flesh for months, I thought that I was ready to be released. Apparently, God didn't think so. On the way back from the visit with my lawyer, the jail administrator, Tyrone Banks, told me that he was going to start a GED program in the jail and that he wanted me to tutor some of the guys. I wasn't in the highest of spirits at the time, but I agreed to help. I thought to myself, maybe that's why God is allowing me to stay in jail a little while longer. I went back to my cell discouraged, not wanting to stay in jail for another 3 or 4 months. I stopped fasting, trying to justify it by saying to myself, well, I did decide to fast until my court date. My date is near. I'm not going to court, so I can cease my fast. I prayed to God about the situation, but my spirit was not lifted yet. Instead, I was inspired to write this song, I'm Not Ready, song lyrics by Edward Broom. Chorus. I guess I'm not ready then may not be wise enough. I think the Lord will not let me fly cause my wings are not strong enough to endure to the very end, through the storm and keep going on. I'm trying to let go of his hand, but the Lord just keeps holding on. I guess I'm not ready. No, no. I guess I'm not ready to go. Verse 1. I guess if my friends came by with a bottle of alcohol, gave it to me, then I would fall. Take a sip, then drink it all. Not so. If I got a call from a girl I saw, and she wanted me to spend the night, I would not hesitate or pause. Oh no, if my friends want to take a ride, and just get high all night, they come by, I would get inside. Oh no, thought I was ready to get out, and ready to serve my God, with all I got. Then the chorus, then verse 2. I guess if I left this place, the first person that I see, that's being disrespectful to me, I curse him out cause he cursing me. Not so, if I was walking out the store, and a woman drop her money on the floor, I pick it up and keep walking out the door. Oh no, if I'm driving in my car, and it's raining hard, a man and a baby walking but I do not stop. Oh no, thought I was ready to depart, and ready to serve my God, with all my heart. Then the chorus, then verse 3. I guess if he lets me go, I just keep doing crime, lying all the time, being selfish and all about mine. Not so. And if I want to have a good time, I would buy some Corona and lime, some vodka and some black and mild wine. Oh no, if I needed me some real quick cash, and my buddy say he got a little grass, I would get it then sell a few bags. Oh no, thought I was ready to be free, and ready to be released, but he's holding me. Then the chorus, end of song. After the children of Israel left Egypt, God hardened Pharaoh's heart again. But this time, God did it so that he could destroy Pharaoh. You see, God told Moses to set up camp in an area closed in by the sea. God knew that Pharaoh would think that the Israelites were trapped, so Pharaoh would pursue them. This final pursuit would bring God his deserved honor and glory. As my trial proceeded, the prosecution presented witnesses who gave their opinionated testimony. It looked bad for the defense. There was no one allowed to speak up on my behalf because there was no way to have their testimony submitted into evidence. Only those who spoke negatively about me were allowed to testify. It was terrible. The odds were definitely against me, and that is exactly the way God wanted it to be. God knew that if and only if it seemed that I had lost the battle, would he receive the glory due him after he fought for me. I must admit, there was a point in the midst of my trial where I decided to take matters into my own hands. As prosecutor Tim Jones submitted into evidence bloody photos of my deceased wife, emotions rose. He described how she was brutally stabbed, wound for wound. I could not stop the tears from running down my face as I sobbed in sorrow. What made things worse is how Mr. Tim Jones walked around the courtroom parading each photo in his hand. I wanted so badly to jump up and blurt out in tears, "Would you please stop showing photos of my dead wife?" It's a good thing that I didn't make that sudden outburst in court. The judge probably would have held me in contempt. That maybe would have caused a mistrial on my behalf and caused me to stay in jail a little longer and go through all of that all over again. In other words, taking matters into my own hands would have been taking them out of God's hands. If Moses had taken another route instead of closing himself in by the sea, as God told him to do, God would not have had the chance to act on Israel's behalf in the manner that he did. If I had done something rash like disrupt court out of emotion, God would not have been able to act on my behalf in the same manner that he did at the time that he did. This whole case has looked bad from the beginning. In fact, I cannot recall a single time when my attorneys told me that there was a chance of me being found not guilty by a pool of jurors. I had faith that God would come through for me, so I insisted that my lawyers not try to bargain with the prosecution for a plea offer, no matter how good it may have sounded. People say that my court-appointed attorney, Nisha Sanders, is not very experienced when it comes to going to trial for high-profile cases. That would explain why she seemed undecided about taking certain actions. I've heard that she's just a good plea lawyer. That would explain why she thought I shouldn't go to trial. I used to tell people, my lawyer works for the system, and she's just doing her job. I would explain to Ms. Sanders how I compared her and the assistant district attorney, Tim Jones, to Droopy the dog and the wolf cartoon. At the beginning of each day, Droopy and the wolf would come into the building with their packed lunches, speak to one another and clock in. All throughout the day, the wolf would try to steal sheep and Droopy would thwart his attempts. When the whistle blew at the end of the day, Droopy and the wolf would stop in their tracks, go go back to the time clock, clock out and bid each other farewell. Although I told her otherwise, Miss Sanders said that she was the wolf in the story. She was missing the point. If the wolf ate one of the sheep, Droopy wouldn't get fired. He wouldn't mourn for the rest of his days over the lost sheep. It was his job to watch over the sheep. Other than that, Droopy had no ties to the sheep. If my court-appointed attorney, Miss Nisha Sanders, would have lost the case, she will have done her job, according to the people who pay her, the state. If I had been sentenced to life in prison, it would not have torn Miss Sanders' life apart. She would still greet, talk with, and enjoy the company of her rivals, the prosecution. I was totally against the relationship between Miss Sanders and the prosecution. The prosecution was fighting dirty by allowing people to come in to testify untruthfully against me and by submitting misleading evidence into the trial. Unlike the prosecution, Miss Sanders didn't seem willing to fight dirty. I wanted her to accidentally bring up the felony charges and convictions against members of the prosecution witness list. That was not going to happen, although I think that's a tactic which the prosecution used. As Detective Jerry Bankston sat on the witness stand and testified, Assistant District Attorney Tim Jones questioned her about my fingerprints being on the murder weapons, because my prints were on everything in the house, including the knives and screwdrivers used in the attack. They made me look like the culprit, although all the items belonged to me. When Mr. Jones asked Ms. Bankston how she knew that those were my fingerprints, she said, they came from Mr. Broom's prior conviction. The defense objected to the statement and the judge instructed the jury to disregard Ms. Bankston's statement about my prior conviction. Here's my take on the whole accidentally mentioning something issue. After a revealing statement has been made in the presence of the jury, even though the judge orders the jury to disregard what was said, the human mind does not work like that. If I'm on trial for armed robbery, and the prosecution is not permitted to bring up a prior conviction of mine for armed robbery, but does so anyway, although the jury is instructed to disregard the knowledge of my armed robbery conviction, it's still going to be on their minds, because they are not computers or robots that have a thought completely erased. That's why I suggested that Miss Sanders take this route and try the same tactic. Aside from following my advice on the dirty fighting, Miss Sanders seemed unwilling to drill my in-laws during their testimony. I knew that their statements were all coerced or designed to hurt me, and that was fine. But the statements were not factual. I particularly wanted Ms. Sanders to extensively question my wife's youngest daughter until she broke down and told the truth or either get caught up in a lie, but my attorney was not willing to do that. She said it was not a good technique and that it would not look good, but I think that her heart would not allow her to do it. I recall at one point in a meeting with Ms. Sanders when she said, I don't want people saying we're some dirty, grimy lawyers trying to do whatever it takes to win this case. Although I did not express myself to her on that statement, I felt a certain way. If you work for the prosecution, you try to get the defendant convicted by any means necessary, whether he's guilty or not. If you work for the defense, your job to get the best results for the defendant. In my case, that was a not guilty verdict. Pharaoh saw that the children of Israel were cornered, so he pursued them. When the children of Israel saw Pharaoh and the Egyptians coming after them, they became afraid and cried out to the Lord. They complained to Moses that they would rather have stayed in Egypt serving as slaves instead of die in the wilderness. See Exodus 14, verses 10 to 12. Unlike the complaining Israelites, I would rather be with the Lord God Almighty than to be under the hardship of slavery. Honestly, I'd rather be dead instead of spending my life in prison. To be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. See 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 8. Even right now, I would rather be in an unknown land, on the move, instead of in prison. Although I must obey the Lord, no matter where he wants me to be. As I say in my prayers daily, order my steps in your word, Lord, and let your will be done. The Lord is our banner. It is he who fights our battles for us. As the children of Israel complained to Moses about the threat of danger from Pharaoh and the Egyptians, Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Be still. Look at what the Lord is going to do for you today. The Lord is going to fight for you. Exodus chapter 14, verses 13 to 14. You have to consider how the Israelites felt when Moses told them to be still and let the Lord fight for them. Most times, we like to fight for ourselves as we expect God to help us out in the manner in which we fight. It is almost impossible to do nothing when we feel like we need to do something. The thing is, we often don't give God all the glory when we lean onto our own understanding. That's why God often tells us to be still, do nothing, and depend on him to do what we cannot do without him. as we neared my trial, which was set to begin on October 31st, 2017. My lawyer, Nisha Sanders, and her assisting lawyer, Miss Elizabeth Davis, presented to me more and more reasons why having a jury trial was a bad idea. They explained to me that some of the jurors would see the bloody crime scene pictures and immediately rule against me. They told me that some would see my tattoo on my chest, cocaine, and judge me. They also said that the jurors would rule against me because of the severity of my wife's wounds and the less critical wounds that I sustained in the attack. I insisted on trial by jury. Days before my trial, I was called out of the pod for a visit from my lawyer. When I stepped into the conference room, there was a full house. Miss Nisha Sanders had come with her assistant, Mr. Bernard, and two interns, Ms. Jones and Ms. Mitchell, whom I had previously met. Along with them were Ms. Elizabeth Davis and Mr. Fred Clark, a lawyer from another law firm. So I had a total of six visitors in the room from three different law firms, all with one goal in mind, to talk me out of going in front of a jury and being sentenced to life in prison. Ms. Sanders' two interns, Ms. Jones and Ms. Mitchell, were only there to speak as Ms. Sanders told them. Mr. Bernard, Ms. Sanders' assistant, verified with Ms. Sanders all of the details of the case that were not favorable for me, but insisted that it was up to me and that he understood how I felt. Ms. Davis tried to convince me to accept a plea agreement. Mr. Clark also did the same, but after I heard his logic, I knew that the devil had stirred up doubt in their hearts and that the devil was trying to stir up doubts in my heart too. Mr. Fred Clark asked me how old I was and said to me, "Okay, you're 36 years old. Let's say that you'll live to be twice your age, 72 years. If you accept the plea offer, you can do about 17 years in prison and have a little more than 13 years to live after prison versus spending the rest of your life in prison." I replied to Mr. Clark, "God has told me that I'm going to come up out of this situation. If I take a plea, that means that I don't believe what God told me. God has some work for me to do." Mr. Clark responded, "What if you take the plea, and in 8 years, God makes a way for you to get out and do the work?" I looked Mr. Clark square in the eyes and said to him, "What if I don't take the plea in 8 years from now, God calls me to do the work that he has purposed for me?" Mr. Clark was then anxious to know how God has spoken to me. I hesitated at first, because I knew that they wouldn't take heed. But then I told them, "My Uncle Howard came to me with a message from God." "Well, God didn't talk to you," said Mr. Clark. "He talked to your uncle." Mr. Fred Clark then asked me permission to contact my Uncle Howard later, and I granted it. I told him exactly how the conversation between me and my Uncle Howard went. Mr. Clark said that God doesn't talk to people nowadays like he did in the old days, but I told him that was not true. Mr. Clark then said something that no Christian should ever say. He said to me, "Jesus ain't gonna be in that courtroom with you." I corrected him. "Jesus is going to be in the courtroom. He is in the bathroom that you just came from, and he is right here in this room with us." Mr. Clark did not speak another word in the meeting. A day or so later, and Miss Sanders told me that it might be a good idea to have a bench trial. That's a trial where all the evidence is presented to the judge only. Then the judge makes her decision. And Miss Sanders said that if I chose this route, the judge could impose a sentence lesser than life in prison if convicted. She gave me a couple of days to consider this option, so I prayed about it. Trial was set to begin the upcoming Tuesday, but something happened on Wednesday of a week before trial. I received an unexpected visit from my older cousin, Dwight. He said to me in the visitation room, "Kane, look, man, I just came to tell you to go ahead and go through with whatever you were going to do. Everything gonna be all right." I asked Dwight, "Are you saying that to encourage me, or are you led by the Spirit, and have you been praying about my situation?" I said this because he told me that Miss Nisha Sanders had contacted him and asked him to persuade me to take the plea offering because Dwight seemed riled up and offended by Miss Sanders' actions. Dwight said to me, "Of course I've been praying. You know I'm led by the Spirit." I knew that Dwight had been sent by the Lord. For 2 nights straight, I had been crying out to the Lord about what to do in my situation. I was surely going to take my case to trial, but now I was faced with the decision of what type of trial to have, a bench trial or a jury trial. The Lord spoke through Dwight and told me to go through with the same plan. But after Dwight told me that, later that night, as I prayed, the Spirit of the Lord told me that if I had a bench trial, I would be convicted. So I obeyed. When I saw Miss Sanders and Mr. Bernard on the following day, I told them that I wanted to proceed with the jury trial. The next day, Miss Sanders and Miss Davis visited me with paperwork for me to sign. stating that I didn't want to call any witnesses and that I would not accept any plea offer. This was their backup plan, just in case the Lord did not deliver me as I told them he would do. When the children of Israel saw adversity coming, they cried out to the Lord, even though the Lord had already told them that he would deliver them from Pharaoh and the Egyptians. The Lord asked Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Go forward, but stretch out your hand and I will make a way for you." Exodus chapter 14 verses 15 to 16, the Lord said the same to me, "Go forward with the trial, but lift up your hands. Let me handle your situation and I will make a way for you." I took heed and the Lord showed his power, just as he did for Moses when he split the Red Sea and made a way out of no way. I told you how I decided on, but did not go through with, my idea to stand up in court and yell emotional outbursts. What I did not mention is that there was also an opportunity the same day to have the local news team in the courtroom. If I had been stuck up on my pride, the love of the limelight, I did not think things would have turned out the way that they did. I think the prosecution would have treaded more cautiously had there been a public eye on them, since I did not let pride intervene in the trial. Here's what Detective Jerry Bankston happened. The lead detective for this case, along with the prosecution, devised a scheme of lie to convince the jurors that I had someone at the crime scene helping me commit this heinous act. They were trying to prove that I did not call 911 from my wife's cell phone and that an accomplice did so as she left the scene. First, let me explain what I did. After hours of struggling to break free and trying to press the emergency button with my nose, I was unsuccessful. I managed to maneuver the phone behind me and press the emergency button and call police. Detective Jerry Bankston secretly deactivated the one-touch emergency button and, along with Assistant District Attorney Tim Jones, demonstrated how it takes 6 steps to call for emergency assistance. My wife's cell phone could not be used for the demonstration, so Detective Jerry Bankston used her personal cell phone, the same dishonest scheme the prosecution was trying to use to condemn me, God used to condemn them. You see, if Bankston and Jones had not decided to trick the jury with a cell phone demonstration, Detective Bankston would not have had her phone while on the witness stand, she and the assistant district. Attorney Trish Rogers would not have been illicitly texting during Bankston's testimony. There would not have been a mistrial, and double jeopardy could not be argued. Greenwood, Mississippi local newspaper, the Greenwood Commonwealth, Friday, November 3rd, 2017. Cops texting causes murder mistrial, by Catherine Eastburn, staff writer. The mistrial in the first-degree murder case of Edward Broom resulted from a Greenwood police officer texting to the district attorney's office during her testimony for the prosecution. Circuit Judge Carol White Richard issued an order this morning that explains why she suddenly stopped the trial on Wednesday, the second day of testimony. On that day, it was alleged that a prosecution witness was texting while on the witness stand. The judge wrote, "After conducting a hearing in this matter, this court found that the prosecution witness was indeed engaging in improper communication with a member of the district attorney's office during her testimony." White Richard said she granted the motion of defense attorney Nisha Sanders for a mistrial because the judge found that substantial and irreparable harm occurred of such a nature that the trial could not proceed in conformity with the law. Although White Richard's order does not name the female witness in question, Greenwood Police Chief Ray Moore confirmed this morning that it was Lieutenant Jerry Bankston. Bankston, who led the investigation in the murder case, testified for several hours about the evidence found at the crime scene. Bankston declined to comment this morning. Moore said that at the time the texting occurred, the prosecution had already rested and Lieutenant Bankston was attempting to get some clarification on something. It was a bad decision on Lieutenant Bankston's part, Moore said. A mistake was made, and it's a mistake that will be dealt with. Moore said neither Bankston nor any other officer would intentionally do anything to jeopardize a case. It was a bad decision that will be dealt with internally and will have repercussions, he said. The district attorney's office did not immediately return calls this morning seeking comment. Assistant District Attorney Tim Jones has said, however, that he intends to retry the case in January. In a written statement, Sanders said the judge made the correct call in ordering the mistrial. It was the only legal remedy for multiple issues that arose, Sanders said. It's not clear what, if any, other issues were raised, as White Richard's order refers only to the improper texting of a prosecution witness. Sanders' statement said her client, who was accused of stabbing his wife, LaKayla Broom, to death in 2014, has demanded a jury trial to get justice for his wife and to clear his name. However, our primary concern at this point is whether issues causing the mistrial have made it possible for Mr. Broom to ever get justice for his wife and to have the fair trial he is guaranteed by both the United States Constitution and the Mississippi State Constitution. God allowed Pharaoh's heart to be hardened. God allowed Pharaoh to think that he could come against God's chosen people. God allowed Pharaoh to chase them through the Red Sea and then get destroyed. God allowed the prosecution to be deceitful. God allowed the prosecution to think that they had me, a child of God, chosen to do God's work, so that they would not relent. God allowed the prosecution's plot against me, so that he could destroy those involved. Don't try and tell me that God doesn't fight our battles for us, because I know better.